Chapter 1. The Archaeological Institute of Ancient Antiquities, the AIAA, New York City, New York, 1 week ago. 4 months to the day after Alyssa Moore was nearly killed when the last Temple of Eden collapsed around her, she had lost her baby, the child dying during the first month of its second trimester. She never felt so empty or hollow. The feeling of not being able to keep her child left her utterly unfulfilled. No matter how deeply she delved into her work, there seemed to be no running away from the pain. In time, her spirited nature atrophied to a skinny range of emotions, flat and muted, with the responses often resonating with the cold fortitude of a machine. Her partner, John Savage, was becoming increasingly concerned about her welfare. She was losing weight, and the color of her skin, once vibrant with the color of tanned leather, was now beginning to wash into a sickly shade that appeared as colorless as the underbelly of a fish. Laces of red stitching crossed extensively across the whites of her eyes, giving them a rheumy look. Even under the effects of complete exhaustion, Alyssa would push herself into the early morning hours, slaving and poring over documents. And though time was said to be eternal, she never seemed to have enough of it. John entered her office located on the first floor of their residence, wearing pajamas. She wasn't, a sign that she hadn't gone to bed at all. Again. "Honey," John appeared troubled and distressed, but she gave him a neutral look that refused to betray her emotions. "I know," she stated evenly. "You're going to ask me why I didn't go to bed. And the answer is the same as it always is, John. I am busy." "You're going to make yourself sick," he told her. "You know that, don't you?" He sat in a wind-backed chair opposite her desk. Somewhere, a small wall clock ticked off the moments. She looked at John appreciatively, knowing she loved him with all her heart. But what pained her the most was her callous attitude of pushing him away with little regret of doing so. Wasn't the baby just as much a part of him as it was hers? Didn't he suffer just as much as she did? "I'm sorry," she finally said, her tone soft and fragile. "John." She cut herself off. His tone was just as soft and gentle. "Alyssa, I love you so much that it's killing me to see you like this. You're not yourself. I know losing a baby is difficult. I'm there with you. But it's time to move on. No one will have a family someday. It'll happen." She resorted back to her cold resilience, to a certain stiffness in her manner. "You're saying there's a reason for this. Something we're not supposed to understand." He looked saddened by her sudden shift in demeanor as she turned from something soft and open one moment to something ice cold and guarded the next. "I want my Alyssa back," he told her. "I want this spirited girl who wants to globetrot around the world, seeking the truth of our past. That bright girl who had the strength and courage to push mountains aside to get at the facts despite the costs." Her face relaxed. She had been poring over documents all night regarding sites and antiquities, documents she had read over 1,000 times before. "When the time is right," he told her sweetly, "we'll be gifted with a child." Her eyes began to well with tears as she looked ceilingward. "No," she said, "not now. Not what we know about what's going to happen in 2026. Alyssa, we don't know if the calendar inside Eden was interpreted correctly. You didn't have time to study it clearly enough." "It's not just a calendar, John. You saw them," she expressed sharply. "You saw those things inside the third pyramid beneath the sands. It was a lab, John. And as for the calendar, it was very clear to me that in the year 2026, mankind will be replaced because we screwed up as a race. And because we screwed up, we're going to be completely erased for it. And I wouldn't want to see my child suffer, if I had a child, when the end comes." Then as her eyes took on a gaze of detachment, she added in a measure that was just above a whisper, "Maybe it was a blessing that we didn't have a child." Then a tear slipped from the corner of her eye, a sparkling bead, and it traced down along her cheek. It was the first crack in the dam. Then it was joined by a second, and a third, until the dam finally burst and the wall shattered. She let out with a sobbing burst while her chest heaved and pitched in cathartic weeping. Joan was beside her and held her close, the man talking to her with a soothing voice, the sound as gentle as a breeze, the tone guiding her, loving her, becoming her voice of salvation. When John ushered her up the stairway into the bedroom, he allowed her to sob beneath the covers of their bed, knowing that fatigue would eventually take her, and while she slept she would dream of pyramids beneath the sand and the horrible secrets they hid. John Savage watched the woman he loved deeply sleeping with gentle repose. Then he wandered off to the AIAA office downstairs to conduct business. There were grants to pin down, funds to help promote future adventures. Hopefully, such explorations and the thrill of the hunt would bring her back to him. He closed his eyes as he sat at her desk, with sheaves of paperwork scattered haphazardly about. The mess was a reflection as to what she was feeling at the moment. He knew this because he was here before, in a bad place that was dark and fathomless. At one point in his life, he had commandeered his SEALed team to the Philippines on a rescue mission while mentally and emotionally compromised, his lack of awareness ultimately costing him the lives of half his team, as well as the primary targets of rescue. In the subsequent months, he fell into a darkness like no other, an obsidian pitch with no way out. Then he met Alyssa, a bright mind and a spirited person who reached down and pulled him free from this dark mire. She was a master in interpreting archaic languages, brilliant in fact, having learned from her father, the discoverer of Eden, which was a civilization hidden beneath the sands of Turkey. She had coaxed him toward the light of optimism, showing him that life would always be full of difficulties that were never too difficult to overcome. So she had become his savior. Now it was time for him to become hers. He looked at the clock. The day was moving on. Then he wondered if her healing was moving along as well. Tick, tock.